Welcome to episode 105 of TV's Top 5, the Hollywood Reporter's TV podcast. I'm Leslie Goldberg, West Coast TV editor, and I'm joined by my friend and co-host and THR's chief TV critic, Dan Feinberg. Dan, how you holding up this week, my friend?
It's been chilly in Los Angeles this week, Leslie. I know our listeners don't love it when we talk about politics or baseball, so I feel like it's a good idea to lead by talking about the weather. And it's been darn cold. I mean, it got into the lower 40s, I think, on Monday. That's crazy.
It got into the 30s here in Burbank. So, yeah, this is fascinating, Dan.
It is. I see. I'm giving our listeners what they didn't know they wanted, or else showing our listeners that what they do want is more politics and baseball and less weather.
Yes. Or we could talk about those Netflix ratings and how Bridgerton is Netflix's most watched show ever if you just only take into account 2 minutes of viewing.
As I say every single time we do this, I have zero doubt that Bridgerton is a hugely popular show for Netflix.
Likewise.
I do not doubt that at all. I've seen the TikTok musical numbers. I've seen the way people talk about that show. There is no question that that show is wildly successful. But I have no ability to make any sense, nor do I have any desire to make any sense of whatever the bleep 82 million people watching 15 seconds is about. But we talked about this in completion rates last week, and I still have the same completion rate humor that I'm going to do if we carry on if we carry on for much longer. So I think we should probably get to this week's headlines.
Leading off this week's headlines with renewal news, Aidy Bryant comedy Shrill will end with its third season on Hulu. The Bold Type will conclude with an abbreviated fifth season on Freeform. NBC is bringing back James Spader drama The Blacklist for a ninth season. Nine seasons, Dan. And Fox has picked up reality competition series I Can See Your Voice for a second run.
I am both incredulous that The Blacklist has had eight seasons and vaguely incredulous that I Can See Your Voice is a TV show that exists. On the casting front, Neil Gaiman's big budget Sandman adaptation at Netflix has cast Tom Sturridge, Gwendolyn Christie, and Charles Dance. Dylan McDermott will star opposite Chris Maloney on NBC's Law & Order spinoff Organized Crime, and Demi Lovato will star in a scripted comedy about food issues that is in development at NBC.
And speaking of development, Michael Hurst is teaming with the F. Scott Fitzgerald Estate to develop a big-budget take on The Great Gatsby for television. Hillary and Chelsea Clinton are adapting the female Kurdish militia drama The Daughters of Kobani for television. LeBron James and HBO are adapting the third season of Serial as a scripted drama. Seth MacFarlane is adapting 2017 bestseller All Our Wrong Todays for Peacock. And Grey's Anatomy star Ellen Pompeo is executive producing an ABC limited series based on the best-selling Paradise book series.
On the showrunners front, HBO has tapped Philippa Goslett to replace Joss Whedon as showrunner on the upcoming drama The Nevers.
And in library news, Modern Family will make its full series streaming debut on both Hulu and Peacock in a shared deal that will bring the Emmy-winning comedy to both platforms 3 years ahead of time. Very interesting deal on that one, with details over on THR.com for those who are interested in that kind of in-the-weeds deals.
Finally, a little PSA. If last week you responded to my very, very, very strong podcast recommendation of the French drama Lupin, it will be back in the summer with five new episodes. So don't worry about where the first five episodes left you. A little bit cliffhangery, but it'll be back fairly soon.
Yeah, Dan, my wife and I binged it as soon as we heard your recommendation, and it did not disappoint. We watched the whole thing in two nights. It was tremendously great.
It's simply a ton of fun. And so even people who are all reticent about, oh, I don't like reading my TV shows, or, oh, it requires more attention than I'm willing to put in to read, or my French ain't what it used to be. Come on. This is really, it's just a heist show. You know, it's a darn good heist show, but it is straight up fun for five episodes, and I'm really looking forward to more. So,
and you can turn off the subtitles and turn on the English dub if you want.
No. Thumbs down on that one for me. But on the other hand, read your TV, but it's a lot of fun, and reading has never been so much fun. It's elementary.
Well, let's get into this week's five topics. What do you say, Dan?
Bring it on.
Number one.
Well, this just in, releasing a tentpole on a streaming service helped bolster HBO Max's fourth quarter subscriber gains. The WarnerMedia-backed streamer ended the year with more than 17 million activated users, twice the number it had at the start of the fourth quarter. In all, HBO Max now has 37.7 million total subscribers. That's up almost 10 million since the start of September. Dan, go figure, Wonder Woman and a Roku deal actually helped bring in new subscribers.
I'm still confused, though, by what this all means in terms of subscribers. I mean, am I a subscriber just because I get it because I subscribe to, well, HBO on my cable system? Does that make me an HBO Max subscriber?
That's where the term activated subscribers comes in, Dan.
Okay. Hence going to the HBOmax.com/activate page so that I can watch it on my Apple TV. That is me activating my subscription. Excellent. Then I'm an HBO Max subscriber. Huzzah.
Huzzah.
I don't know. I just don't know where it's the confusion of where the numbers come from in all of these. I mean, we're confused about where the numbers come from in everything. Numbers are confusing, kids. Just several seconds ago, I was talking about how reading was confusing. Now we're on to numbers being confusing. Apparently, I am feeling really anti-intellectual this week. We need to go back to pictures.
I mean, we could go back and talk about the Peacock subscribers and how many of those are free versus paid, but they don't break that out, which is more math. So,
yeah, it's confusing, and it's confusing with all of them, and it's confusing with all of the different tiers, you know. So, as you say, Peacock has all of its tiers. Hulu has its various tiers. For whatever it's worth, HBO Max, at least, is sort of one number that's centralized.
For now, yeah. But they're going to launch an ad-supported service, so.
Yeah, that's going to be yet another one where, unfortunately, it's going to be a few extra bucks, and just because I don't feel like dealing with commercials, so, oh well.
Yeah, but elsewhere at HBO Max, while we're on the subject, they've had a really busy week on the development side. We're starting to see plans for kind of the next wave of what this service will be, especially under the executive regime led by Casey Bloys, who also oversees the premium cable network. So to no surprise, HBO Max and WarnerMedia are leaning into some of their biggest intellectual property, Harry Potter and Game of Thrones. This week, news broke that there is a Harry Potter live action series in early development. That was a THR exclusive that we broke over on the site. And look, we're not saying that there's a deal. There are no deals. But meetings with writers are already happening and have been happening for some time. Plans for a Harry Potter show are in the works. Obviously, they're going to decline comment because there are no deals to confirm. But there are meetings happening. I've got multiple sources saying that's in the works. So, yeah, it's not a surprise when you think about it, because Harry Potter is one of WarnerMedia's biggest pieces of IP. And the second, you've got DC. We've already talked at length about how they're doing a big budget Green Lantern, and they've got Justice League Dark from J.J. Abrams and a ton of other originals for HBO Max. And then you lean into Game of Thrones, and news broke in the last couple weeks now that there are big plans to expand the franchise. Rumors of a Duncan Egg live action series based on George R.R. Martin's novellas. And as THR broke this week, an animated drama that has the same tone as the original flagship, also among the ideas being kicked around. Lots going on. And meetings are happening with writers on the animated show, too, which is super interesting.
It makes sense. I mean, if you look at what there was, the whole very large Disney Plus investor day where they went over the literally dozens of Star Wars and Marvel original properties that they're having. So that's how you build out a streaming brand. It's, you look over at CBS All Access and you look at what they're doing with Star Trek, and it doesn't feel like it's quite as successful, but I guess we haven't necessarily seen what it's going to look like when Disney Plus actually does have 5 or 6 or 7 of these Star Wars things going at the same time. It's one thing when what you have is Baby Yoda or WandaVision and people can concentrate and focus on that. There has been no dilution of those brands.
I mean, it's not new news either. Look at what AMC has done with The Walking Dead and even with Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul. It's the same concept, just to build up a streaming service, as everyone prioritizes that right now.
But it's still so tenuous as to what the right time to build the brand is, because obviously Fear the Walking Dead has had a long run, and it is successful in its own right. It has been an uphill climb creatively. It's gone through many different permutations and cast changes and tone changes. A
couple showrunners,
And showrunners. And I don't get the impression that, you know, it's obvious on a ratings level, it's very clearly not anywhere near what the original was. And it's, I don't get the feeling that there's anywhere near the conversation on it. So it's not exactly the quote unquote right time. You look at Game of Thrones, how much more excited would you have been if 2/3 of the way through the show, someone had told you, ooh, you're about to get a Dunkin' Egg show, an animated throne show, several prequel shows. Everyone would have been like, yay. Instead, it comes at the end of the series when people, I don't want to say people have turned on Game of Thrones. That would probably be wrong. There will be some interest when these come, but the anticipation is not the same.
Right. But it's HBO is not the same as it was in, even in 2019 when Game of Thrones ended, let alone midway through its start. HBO had never done a spinoff or a sequel or a revival. Right. And what was the movie that they brought back? The Western with Timothy Oliphant? I can't remember the name of it.
Deadwood. Leslie.
Deadwood. Thank you. I'm sorry. I'm not a Deadwood fan. It's fine. I've never seen it. That's why it's just not in my brain. But, you know, that was a big deal because that showed HBO, hey, we're willing to go back. We're going to bring this back and do an end, you know, and now you're doing that with Game of Thrones and they're doing it with Sex and the City. It's, you know, look, if you take one thing away from listening to TV's top five, I hope that it's that IP is cheaper to market and can bring in a pre-existing fan base to a streaming service at a time when all of these conglomerates are prioritizing streaming services. I can put that on repeat, Dan. It's like the same as like Netflix doesn't release ratings. It's the same idea. You're building up and you're leaning into what people care about most. And if you can sneak in an original series that cuts through, The Flight Attendant, more power to you. Consider that a blessing, but that's not a guarantee. It's incredibly hard to cut through with an original series. So that's why you're seeing, you know, oh, Hollywood's out of ideas. No, it's not that they're out of ideas. It's that they know what works.
It goes a little bit on both counts. I think it does go both ways. But certainly what is dead may never die. And things come back. Brand names come back. We talk about it all the time. Things get rebooted. Things get remade. Things get restarted. The terminology is a horrible mess. And I've kind of surrendered on that meaning. And if anyone knows me and knows my peccadilloes on things like getting pissed off at people for misusing begging the question or something, I am not the first person who surrenders when terminology changes, but remake, reboot, and revival, I have kind of thrown up my hands in the air on what any of that means. So I know there are people who have very, very set in stone versions on what each of those things mean, spinoffs, et cetera, et cetera. I kind of have lost that particular thread, and I feel bad about it because I do like having terminology that has meaning, but we've pretty much killed words.
Right. But then you've also got a lot of these streaming companies. Like if you could say, oh, Pretty Little Liars is getting a remake at HBO Max, you're going to probably get pushback from PR at some point. Well, it's not a remake. It's not the same characters. It's new people. They're revisiting the franchise. You're reviving the franchise for a new audience. It's 6 1/2 dozen on the other.
Anyway, we will continue to cover all of these issues in depth.
Number two.
Up second, in sad news, the TV world has lost three icons this week with the passing of CNN staple Larry King, comedic genius Cloris Leachman, and Emmy and Tony winner Cecily Tyson. All three passed this week. I'm struggling for words here because as we were recording this, the Cecily Tyson news just broke. And it's just, it's too much at once and it's too soon. Her memoir just came out like 2 days ago, Dan. This is, the hits just keep coming. It's like 2020 plus all over again.
These were three icons who lived beyond full lives. I don't think you could ever hope to live a life where you were doing the kind of work really all three of them were doing until the very end. I mean, you look at the work that Cicely Tyson has done in the past 5 or 10 years, and it's was some of the best work of her entire career. She was nominated for Emmys for How to Get Away with Murder. She had a Broadway triumph in The Trip to Bountiful. She was just giving tremendous performances really right up until the end. Cherish the Day. She was at press tour for that last January. I mean, you know, held court on a panel, because who wouldn't want to just watch Cicely Tyson emote and discuss for 25 to 30 minutes? So that's what I'm looking at this as, is these are three triumphant lives and three greats. And so we definitely wanted to make sure that we honored them, because in this medium that we cover, they are among the best to ever do it.
Yeah, they're TV Hall of Famers. I mean, each in their own right. You know, the tributes for Cicely Tyson are starting to pour in and as we record. And, you know, there's so many great things about Cicely Tyson, just because this is obviously so fresh right now. She obviously refused to play drug addicts and prostitutes and roles that demeaned Black women. She set a bar, and she set a bar very early in her career, and she stuck to that. You know, like I'm looking on Twitter as we're recording this, and our colleague Chris Gardner is tweeting stories here, like at a TV Hall of Fame event, Shonda Rhimes, who of course cast her in How to Get Away with Murder, which she exec produced for ABC, was just saying just so many wonderful things about her. And you know, even Shonda just tweeted, you know, please let this not be true. And it's just, you know, we are losing our icons, and at a time when it's just, we need them the most. You know, the work is not done, as we all say. So,
no, you know, looking at Cicely Tyson's career, it's, you know, it's 6 or 7 or 8 decades of spectacular work. You go back and you look at her earliest credits. I love looking at pictures and looking at reviews from an off-Broadway play called The Blacks, which ran in the 1960s. And the cast of that show included Cicely Tyson, Maya Angelou, James Earl Jones, Louis Gossett Jr., Godfrey Cambridge. That is an unreal company to be in. And you just trace through her performances. The autobiography of Miss Jane Pittman is a TV movie landmark, and it is one of the great TV movie performances of all time. You look at her movie work like Sounder, you look at more TV stuff like, you know, Roots is freaking iconic, obviously, and she in it is iconic. And like I said, the work she was doing in recent years was just unbelievable. And it was remarkable because everyone had to comment and go, well, I mean, God, look at how much work she's doing. And she's 91, she's 92. Look at what she did opposite Viola Davis in those episodes of How to Get Away with Murder. That is a show that I stopped watching because, you know, it just was, it was a lot. It was too much to keep up with, would be the simplest way to put it. But I would tune into a lot of those episodes when she popped up, because being able to watch those actors interact, that's why you watch any sort of filmed entertainment, is if you can have a scene with Cicely Tyson and Viola Davis, it doesn't even matter what else is in the episode. It doesn't matter what else is in the series. Whatever other legacy How to Get Away with Murder has, putting those two women on screen a half dozen or 10 times is enough of a legacy. And yeah, just the press tour panel for Cherish the Day is one that, you know, just sticks in my memory because of what an opportunity it was for people to genuflect in front of a remarkable person, and a remarkable person who was respected by everyone who shared the screen with her, but also was respected by the room of TV critics who got to watch, again, 6-7 decades worth of remarkable performances, among the best that ever were, and among the best that ever were for the entire duration of a remarkable career. I mean, you're just not supposed to be as good and as consistent throughout as she was, and as powerful and as indelible on the screen in every second. Just searing, her performance in those How to Get Away with Murder episodes. And you know, this is How to Get Away with Murder that we're talking about here. It's an ABC, you know, twisty.
It's a whodunit that stretched on for a very prolonged number of seasons.
But whatever that show was or wasn't, when she was on it, it was the best show on TV for those 5 or 6 minutes per episode, because you could watch her doing her thing. And that's amazing. So, yeah.
And then you also have some great stories, too, about Cloris Leachman. Right, Dan?
And another performer. You go back and look at what Cloris Leachman was doing as recently as 5 or 6 years ago on Raising Hope on Fox. And that show, which was a good show also, but you would watch that, and just watching the things that Cloris Leachman got away with doing on that show and the things that they took such joy in letting her do. You know, she became an iconic comic performer, and you go back and you look obviously at Young Frankenstein, which is one of the great all time comedy performances. And then you look at the Mary Tyler Moore Show, and just one show after another, once again, a little bit like Cecily Tyson, you know, she pops up on How to Get Away with Murder. You have to watch those episodes of Malcolm in the Middle that Cloris Leachman popped up on over the years. It suddenly became the funniest show on TV, and it was a good show otherwise, obviously. But when she was on it, she elevated it. She elevated everything around her. And this is a woman who was also as good a dramatic actress as there was. She won an Oscar for The Last Picture Show, which is a great performance in a great movie. She became more of a comic performer over the years because she was so good at it. And when she passed, it was notable to see how every single TV critic I follow had a story of interviewing Cloris Leachman, because the remarkable thing about interviewing Cloris Leachman was to be reminded that of all of the wacky parts that she played in her career, Cloris Leachman was probably as wacky as any of them. She would never let you do the interview that you wanted to do. And there were times in the later years of Raising Hope where Fox would do an annual interview junket day, and I would go into the thing going, this time I'm going to sit down with Cloris Leachman, and it's going to be the dullest interview ever. I'm going to ask her serious questions. She is going to give me serious answers, and it's going to be exactly point by point. We're going to stick to business. Never worked. Never happened. So everyone has these stories of her popping up. There's a strange bungee swing at the Santa Monica Pier. People have pictures of her at like 80 bouncing up and down on the bungee swing, or going on the roller coasters at the Santa Monica Pier. I love telling the story of being in the buffet line at a press tour lunch and turning around for a second and getting a Diet Coke, and then seeing, when I turned back the other way, that Cloris Leachman was sneaking around and salting my deviled eggs. Why was she doing that? Because she wanted to do that, and because she knew it was the kind of thing that we expected of her. She would interrupt an interview that she was doing to go sit at a piano at a bar just because she loved entertaining people. So, if you look at these two remarkable women, so much of what you have to point to is obviously their professionalism and their work ethic. You do not have the careers that those people have over the decades and decades and decades that they have them if everyone on set doesn't love having you there, if everyone on set isn't learning from you at every single second. So we're currently seeing all the tributes from Cecily Tyson's co-stars. And yesterday we saw it with Cloris Leachman's. We saw people like Greg Garcia, who created Raising Hope, posting a picture of her coming up behind him and licking the back of his neck during production on that show. Those were just the kinds of things that she did. And yes, she would break up an interview and she would go off script and all of that. But obviously, when the cameras were rolling, she gave everyone what they wanted, and Cecily Tyson as well. This is a generation of people who grew up working, you know, who grew up feeling like this was something that you did as a job, and that you worked hard and you worked well and you worked consistently. And you look at the credits, and you know, those women did not take did not take time off. They worked every opportunity they could. And yeah, just amazing performers, and amazing performers really until the end. And you know, that's sort of the category that Larry King goes in as well. Not quite as old as Cecily Tyson and Cloris Leachman, but still someone with 5-6 decades of building up a career, of building up a roster of interviews that make it so that anybody almost in American or world history in the past 50 years who you wanted to see an interview with, Larry King got there. And just amazing longevity, amazing respect for the profession. Yeah, like you said, it's a generation, and it's a generation of the absolute greats. And yeah, given that this is what we do and this is the medium we cover, these are titanic figures, and the body of work will always be there. And no one will ever say that that Cecily Tyson, that Cloris Leachman, that Larry King didn't get and give a tremendous amount of joy and substance. So yeah, just honor the work and honor the memories, I would say.
And cherish them while they're here.
Indeed.
Number three.
Up third, has the pandemic caught up to TV's premiere calendar? February is around the corner, and glancing at the TV schedule, it's a pretty lackluster lineup of new and returning shows coming up, Dan.
It is definitely, we're beginning to see what was probably inevitable. And of course it was inevitable. There was going to be a slowdown. And not only was there going to be a slowdown, but there was going to be a time in which the networks and streamers were going to have to perform a little bit of triage. There were going to have to be choices. There was no way that Netflix was going to have 5 original dramas, documentary series, and comedies premiering every single weekend. You look at this particular weekend, Netflix does have a couple movies, and they have We Are the Brooklyn Saints, but it's a pretty quiet weekend, the kind that Netflix really didn't have in 2020. And everybody is going through this. You look at what the February premiere lineup is, and that's not to say that there aren't good things premiering in February. There are, but
where are all the high profile streaming debuts? Where are the awards players? You know, like, well, I'm going to run down a couple of these, but Firefly Lane, Ginny and Georgia, and then the Kevin James comedy The Crew launch on Netflix this month. CBS has Clarice and The Equalizer, the latter launching after the Super Bowl. NBC has its long gestating comedy Keenan and the Dwayne Johnson comedy Young Rock. For All Mankind, one of Apple's first originals, returns for its second season. Amazon launches Tell Me Your Secrets, which was in development for like 5 or 6 years at TNT and just transferred over to the streamer last year. The CW bows Superman and Lois. And then you've got Punky Brewster on Peacock. Returning shows, some big heavyweights here. Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, Snowfall on FX, Queen Sugar on OWN, and then ABC has American Idol. But you know, who doesn't pay much attention to the awards calendar, I wonder how much of this is because of the pandemic and how much of this is where's the cutoff for some of these shows that have to premiere to be eligible? You know, are we out of that window? Are we in that window? And things have gotten screwy. But yeah, it's kind of bleak.
Again, I think that you will be able to find a couple shows each week. You know, some of those things you just listed, I'm looking forward to. I would like for some of those things to be good. Some of the things that you just mentioned, I already know I loved. So I'm psyched to have Last Week Tonight back.
Right. But Firefly Lane, while it could be cute and could likely catch on for at Netflix, you're telling me that is something that's going to be an awards player? Is that their version? Is that an ex? Is, you know, you see what I'm trying to say here, Dan?
Oh,
but
for sure. No, there's, and I think a lot of these are almost practically designed to be less, this is the big ticket, we need to put things on billboards, it's going to win Emmys, whatever kind of entries, and more the, we would like to believe that this is going to catch on and maybe become a word of mouth hit. So something like, God, whatever, is it Virgin River, whatever that the Netflix heartwarming show that everyone talks about, but that Netflix has never really made any effort to get critics to review. And that's totally fine because it, you know, was never going to get rave reviews. It's just a show that they know will catch on. And
I think it's like a Hallmark show, but made for Netflix.
And I think that probably Firefly Lane and Ginny and Georgia look like they're roughly the same thing. They're probably not going to be TCA award winners. But on the other hand, audiences, and especially there are still audiences that are in quarantine that are looking for turn off your brain, maybe cry a little, maybe laugh a little, heartwarming shows. And there is a place for that. And I think
for sure. I can't wait to check out Ginny and Georgia.
I am looking forward to you telling me if I need to check it out myself. Something like The Crew, that is not going to win Emmys. I don't know how to break this to Kevin James. But on the other hand, is there a place for a broad Kevin James comedy in the world, especially one with a NASCAR backdrop and all of that? Is there an audience for that? Of course.
100%.
So totally. And a lot of these shows are coming out this month are like that, you know, but there are still the big ticket things, you know, look at Clarice and The Equalizer on CBS. Those are brands. The Equalizer brand is a little bit screwy and confused. I don't know whether people think of it as being a fairly long running TV show or a multi-movie Denzel Washington film franchise or just a really, really catchy brand name that doesn't have any particular meaning. So you can just stick it with anything. I don't know. Clarice is a true mystery of branding because it's the latest thing from the Thomas Harris literary universe, but it has access to a character name that Hannibal never had access to, but it doesn't have access to the character name of Hannibal. So it's a strange piece of who owns what and who can sell what on what brand. Does the name clear? Yeah.
I will say, odd. You know, I listened into the CBS TCA day and the panel for Clarice, and exec producer Alex Kurtzman mentioned that they didn't feel like this was the Hannibal Lecter story. That's, you know, as he said, that story has been told and told well. And this is the Clarice show. And we'll probably have more of that coming up next month in our showrunner spotlight.
Indeed. And I will certainly have a review of Clarice as well in our Critics Corner. So, yeah, lots of stuff. And then there are the things that are just pandering straight to nostalgia. You know, a Peacock reboot of Punky Brewster. That is where that is going. If you have a sweet spot in some internal organ for Punky Brewster, that's what that is there for. And Leslie is currently on our video thing, nodding her head aggressively.
Yes. Yes.
But Superman and Lois on the CW is roughly the same thing.
These are important shows for their respective networks. But I think my question for you, Dan, is do any of these feel like the big tentpole TV series premiere that would generate a lot of interest across the spectrum?
I think some of them could. You put Dwayne Johnson in The Young Rock on NBC. That is potentially a wide reaching show. Potentially. Who knows? Dwayne Johnson, he's a big deal. So that's a big piece of branding. But no, if you look at it and if you look at recent headlines involving premiere dates, I think there's a pretty clear sense that February, it was simply determined, was for the most part not going to be where big shows were going to go. But on the other hand, you've been reporting a lot on shows that are premiering in April, and it looks like April could potentially be a much bigger thing.
Yeah, it does seem, obviously, with the late start of production and so many of these shows coming out, whether it be a couple in September and then going on hiatus, et cetera. January typically is a big mid-season launch pad. It really feels like April is becoming the new mid-season this year. Some premiere date news that broke this week, April launches include Chuck Lorre, who will his new comedy, United States of Al. He will own all of CBS's Thursday Real Estate come April. ABC is rejiggering its lineup too come April, giving Grey's Anatomy and Station 19 showrunner Krista Vernoff her entire night with the debut of her Aaron Brockovich-inspired drama Rebel, bumping A Million Little Things back to Wednesday, and then slotting the debut of Topher Grace comedy Home Economics. So it does feel like April is starting to be the new midseason, but then you're also kind of, you know, the other piece of that is wondering, you know, we're reading so much about shows that that have either stopped production because of a positive COVID test or had production delayed because of a, you know, because January was just a complete and total shit show in LA in terms of COVID. But the other pieces too is, you know, I'm hearing so much about shows that had false positives and shut down just in case. You know, This Is Us has shut down a few times, even though all of the positive tests came back as false positives. So that still delays everything. And now the question becomes is, can you keep these shows going with their traditional episode count, or will those get shorter? So will a lot of these broadcast networks specifically need these mid-season launches in April to fill the gaps of shows that couldn't film the entire episode order because of various shutdowns and delays? It remains, Dan, it feels like a puzzle that you're trying to put together without all the pieces.
Oh, it very much is. This used to be the most orderly part of the schedule. You used to know February sweeps. You used to know May sweeps. You used to know mid-season premieres. You used to know things will end in mid-May. You used to know upfronts would be announced and all of the schedules would be announced. You used to have these senses of what the North Star in the industry was. And the business was already shifting away from that. But definitely everything that has taken place in the last 11 or 12 months has shifted further. But fortunately, there will still be things to talk about for the foreseeable future. And we will continue to knock wood that we've got stuff to chat about.
Up next, it's time for our showrunner spotlight segment.
Number four.
Our guests this week are Desus Nice and the Kid Mero, stars and executive producers of Showtime's Desus and Mero, which returns for its third season on January 31st. The Showtime series is the latest incarnation of a format that has taken them from podcasting to Complex TV to Vice. And all the while, the brand has remained strong. Welcome to the podcast, Desus and Mero.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Yeah.
So you guys haven't had a new episode since November, but in December, you got a pretty big sit down interview with Mr. Barack Obama. When you get to sit down with a man who you have to address as president, does it still feel strange when he sits down with you and starts making very specific references to your lives and to your show? And it's clear that he really and truly knows you guys.
I mean, before I got to correct you right there. You said you got to address him as president. I believe we called him Barry. That's just our homeboy from Chicago. You know the vibes. No, it was a surreal experience. It was just like, but I also say at the same time, you're like, wait a minute. He has access to the FBI and the NSA, so he knows stuff about my life. I know he was gonna bring. I'm glad he brought up stuff everyone knows about my life. He could have really done a deep dive and exposed me on air. So I was like, just chill. Don't tell people what I was browsing last night on, you know, in incognito mode, Barry. Don't make it hot, but.
Yeah, he could have been like, Meryl, you buried a cat in your backyard. That's really creepy.
That was just an amazing interview. It was just like, it felt like a bow on the year, you know, just to have just like just interviewing someone who has so much gravitas. But then also, it was just such an easy interview. It didn't feel nervous. It didn't feel high pressure. It really felt like talking. We're not allowed to call him our uncle. He said that. He said, stop calling me your uncle. It was like talking to a contemporary at our job. So we'll leave it at that.
How many people does he travel with? How much of an entourage or posse does Barack Obama have these days?
It wasn't that wild. It actually was not that wild. It was like Secret Service and like, you know, maybe like a handful of people. It wasn't like MC Hammer level entourage at all. And like, and he wasn't like a politician. It was so wild too, because it wasn't like a political interview. Like a lot of politicians are real stiff and like very speaking like really dumb cliches, like boring as fuck. But Barry came through and was just like off rip. He was just like, you motherfuckers suck at basketball.
And he ripped the Knicks off the bat.
Wow. I was like, wow.
And that was
okay.
Cool because he came because of COVID. Right,
because of COVID,
he couldn't roll as deep as he usually would. Neither could we. Like, you know, yeah, it was social distancing and limited. But he came through. He had his two guys just standing there letting us know that, you know, you act up, something might happen to you. So, you know, that did keep us in check. But then after he took a couple of shots at the Knicks, I was like, you know what? I might have to rush him. I might have to run at him, you know? You know what? I might have to die for my orange and blue life. I'm sorry.
Get Swiss cheesed up defending the Knicks honor.
So now you had the interview with Obama, and, you know, obviously it was in the same room during COVID, so I'm sure there was testing like crazy. But you prepare for the return of the third season, are you guys going to be back in studio, back together like that with guests in studio? How much of this is going to be you guys navigating who feels comfortable social distancing in the same room versus doing it electronically?
Well, it's tough. We're coming back like remotely, because, you know, before we sat down with the whole crew, you know what I mean? Like, because we're producers and not, you know, we like Pino, but we're not Pinos. We're not producers in name only. You know what I mean? Like, we reached out to, you know, the heads of departments and like, hey, do you feel comfortable coming back? Like, you know what I mean? Like, edit bays are closed. There's not a lot of ventilation, et cetera, et cetera. So just to have everybody feel comfortable and safe, like we stayed remote, you know what I mean? Because at the end of the day, if you feel unsafe in your workplace, the product is going to suffer. So, you know what I mean? The having everybody feel, you know, good and about what we're doing, and we hit like a stride at the end, mid season two too, that like, you know, I feel like the two of us could kind of, you know, run a Radio Shack or something at this point with all the wires and shit that we've been doing.
Yeah, we sent an email to our crew. We sent an email to our crew at the beginning because we were like, yo, we can either go back to the studio or we can continue remote going virtual. And we just asked one question, which is, how many of y'all like living? And then a lot of them said we do like living. And so, you know what? We decided we're going to go virtual. But no, it's like right now it's unnecessary risk. We don't, you know, we love our staff. You're not going to hear in 10 years that we were hostile to our staff and throwing stuff at them. And I'm hitting my assistant with my BlackBerry. Like, those are our staff is our family. We never want to put them in any kind of danger. The numbers are way too high still in New York. And if we even lost one production member, we'd be devastated. So we're still doing it virtually. And I mean, look, got the sneakers behind me. Miro got the new apartment. People like what we do virtually. And we're one of the few shows that actually, you know, like we kind of evolved into a different type of show over the course of the pandemic, and we just want to kind of keep that groove going and just keep people laughing on Sundays and Thursdays.
How would you guys describe the difference that you guys evolved into? Because obviously so much of the show is the interplay between the two of you and the chemistry between the two of you, and it has to be different under these circumstances. What did you find in a different chemistry as the quarantine episodes progressed?
Well, I find that this is, it feels kind of like, you know, everyone's using Zoom all day, you know, like you get tired of Zoom, Google Hangouts, all these virtual meetings. But then you see me and Miro doing it, and it's kind of like we're the two bad kids in the classroom. You know what I'm saying? We're just cracking jokes, and we're just, if we did our show in your actual work Zoom meeting or Google Hangout meeting, no work would get done. Your boss would fire everyone. You'd be upset. You're like, why are they cracking jokes? But no, that's our lane. That's what we do so well. And you love to see that at the end of the day. It's like, it would be weird if we were still in the studio and like the rest, everyone's still locked down in their house. And you're like, yo, I can't leave my house. But you're like, yo, they're still in their homes. They're still making it happen. This is reality. They're making comedy in a pandemic. And it's funny. And that's what we just want to keep doing.
Yeah, man. That's the number one thing. I mean, like, I feel like the chemistry hasn't suffered. Initially, like, you know, with home setups and like internet being shaky and like weird stuff like that. Like that, you know, kind of was a little monkey wrench. But then we figured that out real quick, and then we were off to the races, you know, because like you said, it's always been about the interplay between the two of us. And I feel like that's the kind of an advantage that we have, you know what I mean, compared to the rest of the landscape, because we're not dependent upon an audience's reaction, right? So like, I'll make a joke for Desus. Desus will make a joke for me, you know what I mean? Like, and the audience is just the third person in the room kind of like, yo, we're making this joke for you now, you know what I mean? Like, and it's just, that chemistry has always been there, and it's always been like, I always call it joke tennis, just like going back and forth, you know, on a topic until we're just like, all right.
Also, you have the overwhelming fear, like after a nice, robust 1 hour recording session, you look down and you're like, did I press record? Yo. Yo. You gotta sound like the 60 people on the production set. Be like, hey guys, could we just use the Zoom audio? And they're like, no. Like, no, what do you didn't record what the Stacey Abrams interview? I'm like, I forgot. I panicked. I'm sorry. I was on Twitter.
Sorry.
It was a tab. I'm sorry.
Literally me every time. I literally just checked exactly to make sure that we were recording. That happens all the time. Yeah.
I'm not even looking at you. That's why I'm looking down. I'm like, okay, still recording. Good. Switch back to Google.
How often and how literally did what you just described happen?
No, that's never. You know what? We had one day, and I don't know if it was Mercury was in retrograde or whatever. Fam, we started recording at 1 o'clock. that, and then it was just like anything that could possibly go wrong technically went wrong. It was
Murphy's
like
Law, bro.
The charger wasn't fully plugged in. So then it was like my AirPods were dying, and then the Terra Deck wouldn't charge, and then the sync, like the servers wouldn't sync. And so, you know, everyone was like, all right, we tried with the computers. We're going to stop down at four. We're going to stop down. Try again at four. Tried again at four. More problems. Mirrors. Wi-Fi is going out. I'm just having like the weirdest. I'm having like some sort of weird static issue on my computer. And now we're recording at like took six. And I was just like, we have to record, we have to pass it in the next day. And that's the thing, you can't, it's not one of those things where like, oh, we tried, what do you want to do? It's like, no, oops. You have to make the show. You guys have to make this happen.
You got to deliver an episode, dog. Like, we can't run a rerun of, like, Homeland.
Best tech team in the world. They made it happen. And that's the other thing about Showtime. They do not play around, because they had sent me a MacBook, and, like, one of the first days of recording, I accidentally dropped the camera, and it fell and shattered the touch bar on the MacBook. Showtime had a brand new, fully kitted out MacBook here in 20 minutes. I was like,
and then
okay.
When it was just like, yo, then we upgraded cameras, and they were like, you know what? Let's get IMAX in there. And then they sent motherfuckers in here with hazmat suits to set up like Apple boxes and tape and all this wild shit. Like, it was not a game, bro. It was like soup, like a mission. It was like some PlayStation 5.
When you're walking the streets
shit.
And you see them, they're like filming for Law and Order or some TV show, and you see the trailers and those heavy cables. Like, that's right outside this room right now. Just all these heavy cables. I'm about to hire some union guys just stand out there with crafty. So I feel like, you know, just like get the old feeling back.
Yeah, we're here. You know what I mean? Got the Teamsters on deck. Got the cheese sticks that I can't eat because I'm going to pee out my ass in an hour if I consume them. You know what I'm saying? But yeah, just to restore the feeling. I totally feel them. You know what I mean? Those cables were making my basement a fire hazard. That's why I had to move. It was wild. Like, you know, you got coats sitting on top of outlets, sitting on top of wires. It was like, And then my kids would come down here and try to play Spider-Man.
You're doing this while you're homeschooling four kids under the age of 10.
Yes. It was mayhem, dog. It was like the Royal Rumble. Like, if you ever just, like, go on YouTube and just pull up random timestamp of a Royal Rumble, that's what it was looking like in the crib all the time, 24 hours a day.
That's crazy. Well, okay, so before you came on, Desus, Mero was talking about how basically his hiatus was spent dealing with his kids and being a father in these very strange times. What did you do during your quarantine? And do you ever just text Mero to make fun of him for the fact that you're not dealing with four kids under the age of 10?
Nah, I got, listen, just because you don't got kids, I got a whole different set of problems. Like, just everything with the pandemic and stuff. I've been doing charity over here. It's a fridge that you can, you know, like one of those fridges, a community fridge to donate food and things like that. And I think, like, I didn't realize, I was like, oh, you just put chicken and stuff in there. And like, no, there's very specific needs. Like, they need avocados. That's the big thing in my neighborhood. Like, because we have like a lot of Mexican and international immigrants in my neighborhood. So I've been trying to research an avocado plug to find for my fridge. And like, it's not the same as like selling drugs. Like, you can't just go to someone like, yo, bro, you gotta plug on avocados. Like, you gotta go legally and like try to make that work. But it's just like, the pandemic, just being stuck inside, I've just been consuming media, getting ready for the new season. So I've been watching possibly every possible show. I've been listening to possibly every song that is on the top 20 right now and watching music videos. And you understand as an older person how disorienting and troubling these music videos are, because these music videos are set up to really impress a 16-year-old, and as someone who's not 16, it's very, you see different things. Like, they're like, oh, this is a wicked party, bro. I'm like, okay, you're over capacity. No one's wearing masks. Where's the homeowner? excuse me. Like, someone is skateboarding on the deck. I think that's China. You can't just, like, skateboard on China. It changes your view of things. But thankfully, I have all these cultural references, and I cannot wait to start the show now, because, like, I've watched Kajillionaire. I've watched The Flight Attendant. I've watched all these shows that are not in my wheelhouse, so I can make those references. You know, I can't wait to get a old Doyleo reference in at on Desus and Mero. It's going to be great. And just have people like, yo, he studied. So, basically, I've been in the gym getting ready.
You know what I'm saying? Binging Bridgerton, we out here. Let's get it.
So you do have the new season starting Sunday. Can you talk a little bit about, first of all, who's your first guest and how are you preparing to, how political are you going to be after, especially after coming, you know, back on after the election?
You know what? Job done. We don't have to be political anymore. We got Trump done. We don't have to do any. Trump is out. Politics is done.
That's it.
Yes.
Racism everything. Is over.
America is politics back is to great. Be its great old self.
It's back. No. It's great again. You know what I'm saying? Like, no, we made it.
Definitely. Our first guest, Stacey Abrams, you know what I'm saying, doing a victory lap, as she yep. should, who we've had on before. So this is not like, it's not like a, you know, like a cold turkey interview. That's not, as we say, friend of the show. And friend of the show interviews are always better because people are comfortable interacting with us. And we've worked with Stacey Abrams on other projects outside of the show. So the repertoire between us is perfect. But as far as political, we can't stop now. Like, people come to our show to see, you know, our views on politics. We've had Kamala on there. We've had President Joe Biden. We've had Obama. We've had Stacey Abrams. We've had so many people on. And people enjoy seeing these people outside of the MSNBC, that bubble of politics. They like seeing them interact with me and Mero. And we're going to continue to have people on as the, you know, as the occasion calls for it. Because, you know, like, it's always a wild political time in America. And, you know, that's what our show reports on. It's not just booty videos and us making fun of goats biting other goats on the testicles. We have some social responsibility.
That's right. You know what I'm saying? We're citizens, so we perform our civic duty. You will get some dick jokes, but you will also get Bernie Sanders yes. looking at sneakers. You know what I mean? The human side of politicians.
In the first season, you guys had, and into the second season as well, you had most of the Democrats who were running for president. When those people came in, who did you get the feeling had been best briefed on who you guys are and what you guys do, and who kind of seemed like they came in perhaps a little bit more cold than probably they should have?
Ooh, good question. Surprisingly, Joe Biden was really plugged in when he knew us. Like, and it was, I think the problem with that was before Biden, we did the Biden interview, there was a whole lead up about he has dementia, he doesn't know where he's at. Do you remember that when everyone was like kind of crafting him as Joe is lost out there?
Sleepy Joe. Sleepy Joe. Blah, blah, blah.
And like, even when we posted that we were going to have Joe Biden on, people in the comments were like, I hope he can do a coherent sentence. I hope he stays awake. I hope he can remember you. And no, he completely, great interview. And I think the best moment was at the end of the interview. You know that weird moment with the end of the Zoom call when everyone's doing that weird wave and you're looking for the button?
They're like, hey, bye.
Before yeah. he clicked the button, he's talking to one of his assistants and he goes, oh, I really like those guys. Like, very sincere, very not for the camera, not putting on airs, like a very sincere. And that was the feeling we got from interviewing him. So that was really good. But there was no, you know what, to be honest, no politician really gave us the feeling that they didn't know us. But at the same time, you know, they have political staffs that are going to give them the information. And a lot of them right. do watch the show, so they did know. But there was never a moment where somebody was just like, hey, Jesus. And I'm like, no, I'm Jesus. That's Miro. Like, we didn't have that.
Yeah, exactly. So, Jesus, how are your kids?
I'm like, oh. You know, like,
then that's never happened.
If they do that, I'm like, whoa, 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 what'd you hear? Whoa, whoa, whoa.
What'd you hear? Well, that's whoa. Not me. Hey, whoa, 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 whoa. What's going on here?
The IRS is listening. Come on, I don't need these problems.
They're not in the lower 40 states. They're not in the lower 48. Doesn't count.
So, I mean, did you guys miss having a platform during the election cycle and during, like, you've been off for mm-hmm. a few months now. So, you know, how much of this, of what you were going to see in the new season is your comments on what's already transpired versus just looking forward?
That's a good question. You know what? We'll probably definitely have to do a recap, but it reminds me a lot. We interviewed Jon Stewart and I asked him this question. Every time The Daily Show would go on hiatus, the world would fall apart. Like, when The Daily Show was on hiatus, Hurricane Katrina happened. So it's that kind of thing. You miss these big events and you come back and you have to kind of touch on them, but there's other events happening, so you cannot really dwell that much on what happened. So we're going to, you know, we'll probably do a quick recap, talk about what happened. But I'm sure some new stuff is going to happen and, you know, when it's time to make the show. But definitely when we were on hiatus, it's a weird feeling watching the news and you're just like, and you go on Twitter and people are like, why are you on hiatus? We want to know what you think about this. And you're like, yeah, I wish we had the show tonight, but it's not happening. Because when that Capitol riot happened, I was like, me and Meryl would eat this up.
We would be pulling up from 80 with this shit. You know what I mean? But again, like Jesus said, like, it's probably going to start, like, you know, previously on America.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. But at the same time, you have, obviously, Showtime's a premium cable network, but everything is streaming right now. Showtime has a streaming service of its own. Its parent company, Viacom CBS, has a big platform that it's trying to broaden out. Have you talked about doing stuff like digital one-offs? I mean, obviously, you had the big Obama interview, and that
in and of itself is a perfect standalone. But have you talked about doing like a daily hit for a streaming service like Paramount Plus, which is soon to be relaunched in March?
I mean, we have our digital team. Shout out to them. They keep, you know, like they're making content. And we're going to definitely increase how much content we're making in the next season. So maybe some of that ends up on Paramount Plus. But that's something we're still in discussions about.
Well, Mero, you know, Desus was saying that he's been kind of researching and staying on top of everything for the last couple of months. Do you, because of all the responsibilities you have at home, do you sometimes find that things slip through the cracks and that you miss certain things in the news and culture or whatever? Or are you able to do both?
Yeah, like it's not like as like it's kind of like Kobe and Shaq, right? Like how Kobe's like, if Shaq worked out, we would have won 12 championships. Like, but regardless, like we still did it. Like I'm able to do it, but it's like, you know, it's kind of like, you know, in a different way. It's definitely not as exhaustive as Desus, because like I just don't have the bandwidth to like sit and watch like binge a whole series or whatever. So like I pick my spots. Like I know what's huge, right? Like the Roy Jones, Tyson, Jake Paul whole situation, like that whole thing. Like I knew that was huge. I was like, yo, you got to key into that. Like there's certain things that, you know, people are looking for your opinion on, and you just sort of like, okay, boom, that's on the radar. Or like, you know, a big events or anything that's huge, that's making waves, you know what I mean? And I live in my house, like everybody else, and I live on the toilet a lot, so I'm on Twitter like a lot, you know what I mean? Just like reading what's going on, and Twitter's like real time, like, yo, this person just perished, like, you know what I mean? Like, or whatever, you know what I mean? Like the second after like the certificate is signed, you know what I'm saying? So like in that regard, like, yeah,
definitely. So if you're tweeting, the kids should assume that you're probably on the toilet?
I'm absolutely, if you see me tweeting, I am either shitting or waiting for a Zoom to start. Or like, you know what I mean? Like in transit, like somewhere, like, you know, Heather's like, you know, I can't pick up a box of like, you know, Poland Spring bottles, so you have to come to the supermarket with me and I'll be tweeting on the way to ShopRite.
Speaking of shitting, did you guys reach out to have Trump on the show when you had all the Democratic candidates on? I'm sorry, I couldn't resist.
That would have been an amazing interview, but that never went out. We might get him now, because you got to think about like everything going on. He cannot tweet. You know how mad he must be? He must.
Yeah, he has so much pent up shit. Like he has a brain full of drafts.
He probably just has like post-it notes and he's just putting them all around like his place in Florida, like for Barron and people to read them. But I don't even know if he, you know what? He couldn't sit through the 60 Minutes interview. He could not get through an interview with us.
Like, no that way. Because we're New Yorkers, like him. You know what I'm saying? Like we're New Yorkers. We'll be getting his ass like, yo, my man. Like, you know what I mean? Like, XYZ, whatever, whatever. Yo, Barron's 6'10". Why is he not in the AAU? Why is he not in the preps? Why is he not hooping right now?
Like we spoke about earlier, like, you really think we can send a Zoom ID to Donald Trump? You really think we can get Donald Trump to match his AirPods to the system audio and then record it OBS?
Well, was the Obama interview, was that kind of a Moby Dick, your white whale kind of thing? Was that something that seemed like sort of a pinnacle interview for you? And now that you've done it, do you have a sense of what the next interview that you'd kill to get would be?
You know, it's funny, like people, like that was the question, right? Like, you know, when people ask you a question, well, what question are you tired of hearing? People are like, what's your dream guest? Yeah. You know what I mean? And it was always Obama. And now we've done Barry. You know what I mean? So it's just like, okay, like you said, what's the next like big get? And truthfully, it's just like, you know, I don't know. You know what I mean? Like who could it be? Like it has to be somebody that's like, I don't do interviews, like a Beyonce or somebody like that. You know what I mean? Like I don't typically go on late night and do interviews with people.
Right.
But I'll make an exception for you.
That's fair. You know, when you have someone like Obama on and you have this great, you know, obviously the interview was fantastic and so lighthearted, but also, you know, it had so much there was fun and information in there. It was like kind of like that best cross section. When you do an interview like that, how much does it help open the doors for booking other guests? I mean, I know for us, you know, for Dan and I, once we, you know, start getting big showrunners on, the doors start opening a little bit easier. And it was a little easier to book guests today than it was a year ago when we were first starting and nobody knew who we were. I mean, nobody still knows who we are, but
it's Leslie Goldberg and Dan Feinberg, y'all. You know what I'm saying?
But like, how much did the Obama interview help you when it comes to booking other people on the show?
Oh,
in season three.
Anytime you do like a big name politician, that definitely helps because you get on the radar of their supporters, but then you also get on the radar of people who don't like that politician, so they know it. And even like an Obama interview, you start getting, you know, like using social media as the measurement, you start seeing the Obama interview pop up other places, like places that Showtime didn't place it, so it's naturally going viral. And then actually, this is the sad part, you start seeing it pop up and you're just like, yo, look at this cool interview Obama did, and it doesn't mention our name, it doesn't mention the name of the show. You're like, come on, like even when Obama was flaming the Knicks, and then you see like on like ESPN some other things, they're like, Obama went on some show and flamed the Knicks. They're like, no, he went on D's.
Yes!
He went on D's and Mary on Showtime, season two. Get our name right.
Yes, number one show late night. That actually pissed me off. That literally made me mad.
Yeah.
He's right. It actually pissed me off because they asked Tom Thibodeau's the new coach of the Knicks. Everybody knows we are diehard, salt of the earth Knicks fans. You know what I'm saying?
That's right.
Like, and they asked Tom Thibodeau, like, yo, you know, the same exact question that DJ just said. Obama just said on some show, like, no! Obama said on Desus and Merrill, the champions of the Knicks, you know what I'm saying? who have steadfastly held their fandom, regardless of what's going on in Brooklyn. That show. Mention that show. We are the number one show later, goddammit! Put some respect on our names! You know what I mean? And then that would have put us on Tom Thibodeau's radar, and maybe, in the future, one of my children could be a prospect.
I thought you were going to say maybe he'll do the show.
No.
Priorities.
No, whoa. We'll get him. Tom, you can come on whenever you want.
Any Nick could come on at any given moment.
Even if it's
the middle of a game, we will interview you.
We don't care. Yo, Kevin Knox, yo, if you're not getting enough minutes, bro, you're sitting on the bench, come do the show.
Come through, Emmanuel, quickly. We got you.
We got you, my guy. Point guard.
Okay, but honestly, though, when you guys started, it really did kind of feel like anybody could pop up on the show at any time. You know, like local activist, random athlete, comedian no one had ever heard of, etc., who became big after that. Do you guys feel like you still have the same flexibility when it comes to guests? Are there people from early in the show, regulars who you miss, who you know you just couldn't have on right now?
Well, you know what? The thing with that was when we first started, you have to remember, we used to do a show four times a week. So the amount of guests you can have on there, that changes it. It's like, instead of having like one big guest, it's like, yo, you got to have four guests. And working with celebrities' schedules, if people are doing movies, people like having, like now that the pandemic is a little different, but you know, like having someone come to the studio, wait in the green room and just be there. The interview, like that, it was just too logistical to have that many people on. And then also when we first started, it was more of a matter, like it was a very bare bones production. And it was literally, as Meryl was saying, like we were getting guests right from our phone. We were just texting our friends like, yo, do you want to come on the show that, you know, like right now, a lot of people have not heard about, or like, you know, you call a celebrity. They were like, we've never heard of you. And that has changed. But at the same time, we still have our friends on the show. When we have the digital hangouts where we just invite friends and you'll go on there and just be like seven celebrities that they're not even celebrities to us. They're just our friends. It's like Janice Griffin, Bomani Jones, Sarah J, just people like that, just chilling. And so while they might not be on the main stage of the big show, we'll do it on digital. We'll do it on the others. We'll have them on Insta. You know, we still fit our people in there. There's no one's too small to be on the show.
So you've got Stacey Abrams on Sunday. What else can you say about who to expect is coming by for season three?
Season three. Ooh. Let me see. We got Baby Yoda.
I'm saying. Let me see.
We got Godzilla is coming through to promote his movie.
Wait, so you have Godzilla, but you don't have King Kong. Can you do that?
You know what?
No, we have King Kong, too. We have King Kong, too. No, it's like the Anderson Cooper, Andy Cohen thing that we did.
Yeah, the thing is,
King Kong, Godzilla.
King Kong is doing Fallon, so it's embargoed, so we can't have him on until he does that first. So, you know, it's just a scheduling. You know how these Hollywood types are. You know,
Feels like you're taking a side, and that seems dangerous to me. So,
full transparency here. Let's be honest. King Kong and Godzilla are kind of divas. You know what I mean? Like, they've kind of like, you know, like, oh, I'm Godzilla, I'm King Kong, you know, like, I'm an icon, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So you mean their heads are too big to fit through the door?
Yeah, for sure.
Speaking of heads too big, I mean, like, Godzilla, King Kong's assistant was like, listen, remember what you were saying about the AirPods? He can't do them. He can't do them. So what are we going to do? So we got to figure that out. You know, it's just a mess.
They wanted to do it. Like, King Kong wanted to, like, hold both of us and climb the Empire State Building and do the interview up there.
We were
like,
come on, let's do something else.
That's so corny, bro. Yeah. Also, it's not safe. Are you wearing a mask?
Also, you guys are in quarantine. You got to respect that.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
Like, how we can't green screen that. That's unfair. We were very Nolan-esque in that respect.
Yes. This is the best part of the interview when just no one's talking. They're just laughing. They're just laughing. Love it.
How differently do you guys have to prepare when you have someone like a Dr. Fauci or something who, you know, has a serious message that they have to impart? You know, you want them to be funny. You want them to be loose. You want them to feel like it's cool to be on your show. But they're also talking about a global pandemic and keeping people alive. Mm-hmm. How hard is that?
Not hard at all. Not hard. It's the same interview.
Super easy.
Same. We go into every interview the same way. It's like, what does this person want to talk about? And how do we get this out of them without it being boring? So with Dr. Fauci, if you remember, that was the beginning of the pandemic. We knew nothing. And then it was just like, he came on our show and it wasn't just so much telling our audience stuff. It was like telling us stuff. Because I remember asking him, I was like, how do I tell if I have COVID versus having the allergies or hay fever? Because, you know, when I'm sneezing, I don't. And, back then, even doing that interview, you could kind of see he was caged. He couldn't say exactly, like, we'd ask him questions and he was like, So to see him now, being able to smile and talk freely, that's totally different. But even at that time, we were just like, oh, this guy, there's certain things we can't ask this guy. And if we ask him this, he might get in trouble. So even that, you know, like navigating that during an interview, but at the same time, it's just like, you know, who's Dr. Fauci? What's Dr. Fauci talking about? How can we present him in a light that's not going to be presented in other interviews? So that's why we're talking to him about growing up in Brooklyn, playing basketball, what he does is in his self-care, because he's having these long, stressful days. And that's kind of how we come at every interview. It's like, who is this person and how can we present this person in a different angle than they've been presented in every other interview?
Yeah, bullseye. You know what I'm saying? And the thing is, in that interview, you get to talk to Dr. Fauci and then you get to talk to Anthony from Brooklyn. You know what I mean? Like, in the same interview.
Would you have him back on this season?
Definitely. Oh, for sure. Because also, at the end of the interview, we said when the pandemic was over, we're going to go for a pasta dinner. And the pandemic's not over, so maybe we do the pasta dinner over Zoom. You know?
Yeah. We promised him Ann and Tony's, and we will deliver.
Yes.
You mentioned earlier that in different incarnations, earlier incarnations of the show, you've done four nights a week, etc. Now, when you started off, it was one day a week. You've gone to two. There's been a little bit of shifting back and forth on days a couple times. How are you feeling right now about the literal format of the show? Do you feel like you'd want to do it more days a week? Do you feel like an hour is the thing you could imagine doing at any point, et cetera? Is it sort of set in stone at the moment for you in terms of what you guys are doing?
Well, the way things are happening so quickly in the environment, we were asking Showtime to just make us have a 24/7 stream. And just record us constantly. Just have the cameras open and we just watch us die on camera. No,
like Big Brother.
No, like right now, it's shout out to Showtime. I think the idea, you know, you don't see other shows doing this. The idea of having two shows in a week kind of bookends everything. It's just like, yo, we caught this. And if we didn't catch it on the Sunday show, we'll catch it on the Thursday show. And that's more, I feel like that's enough. People want more. They want it four times a week. But you got to remember, now we have like sketches. We have like other things going on. We have people have to edit the show, this production. We have some incredible animation stuff. So there's like behind the scenes parts that, you know, we got to give people time to do stuff. So the four nights a week, it's like, all right, we got two nights a week. We're doing a good job now. We like what we got right now.
You know what I mean? You can't cut the coke too much, you know what I mean? Because then it's going to be trash.
Yeah.
You're going to be shitting all day.
And something like the sort of history of hip-hop episode, which is the other thing that you've done between last season and this season.
Mm-hmm. You're...
DMFM.
Well, that's the sort of thing where it really does feel like a passion project for you guys. And it's not the kind of thing that you do because it's going to blow up in the ratings or whatever. It's something you do because you want to do it. How much flexibility do you guys feel like you have to do other episodes like that in the future if you wanted to?
Oh,
I mean, they let us do DMFM. Like, if they let us do that, they'd be like, man, do you want to play Game Boy on camera for 2 hours? Go right ahead.
Definitely.
There's a budget.
Because, like,
you know what I mean?
We presented the idea of DMFM, and they're just like, you know what? It was weird because they were just like, okay, some of these rappers are so old, I remember them. And I don't think the new generation is going to get it. But if you guys believe in this, we'll make it happen. And, you know, it came out amazing. And people were just like, they want another one. People were like, they want a regional one. They were like, why can't you do this every week? And it definitely was a passion project because who, like, come on, you're sitting there talking to, like, rappers, like, that sounds like the most boring thing ever. And we have, like, people in our mentions who are just like, yo, I do not know who any of these rappers are. But after watching that DMFM thing, I'm going to Google them. I'm going to go listen to them on Spotify. I didn't know about Sheila E's history, things like that. And that was the reason for it. It was like kind of like a love letter to hip hop in New York City. And it definitely came through. And people, you know, like, we were really proud of that. It just... And then also shout out to Showtime throwing the production budget out there. The way it came out, it really felt like a radio station. Yeah, it was one of the cooler things we did last year. And like you said, it was a passion project. And we're definitely going to try to do another one.
It was dope to like make that connection, right? Between like the old school. Like there's a line from Sheila E. to City Girls. You know what I mean? Like, and like kind of bridging that gap was dope. You know what I mean?
So with so many aspirations that expand and... You know, I'm curious, how much are you guys talking about expanding your brand as producers? Obviously, you know, the show is first and foremost, but are you looking to produce other series or develop other talent, whether it be in the podcast space or for Showtime or for another platform? Like, how are you using your position now to help foster the career of others and then maybe the next generation?
Oh, definitely. We're always on the look for like up and coming talent and trying to figure out what the next big thing for the brand is. Because we got our podcast, we got our Showtime show, we got the Tim's, we got the ice cream, we got the book. And it's just a natural extension of the Deez and Mero Bodega Boys universe. You know, find out who's going to be this person here and like who's up and coming that we can help support. Because when we were coming up, you know, shout out to Charlamagne, shout out to D-Ray Davis, all these people, these established comics, they saw us and they were just like, you know what? I know how to do this. Y'all don't know how to do this. I'm going to look out for y'all. I'm going to give you some pointers. I'm going to show you how to navigate this. And now that we know that, we're going to try to do that for the next generation. So we're definitely, you know, we're definitely trying to get our producer hat on there and just find, you know, just keep extending what we're doing.
Absolutely.
I mean, you started obviously as a podcast, but who are the next voices in podcasting that our listeners should be checking out?
Ooh. Shout out to our guys, 95 South. That's Chico Bean, my man Carlos, and DC 85 South. Excuse me. Cool guys. We worked with them on Wildin' Out. They're super hot right now. Great.
They're like Bodega Boys funny. South. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Who else we got? There's so many good podcasts out right now.
Yo, you know, it's wild too. Like, sorry to cut you off these, but like, how like A-Rod made that kind of seamless transition from like baseball player to like analyst. Noriega has done like the same thing with podcasting. Like he made like a kind of like a seamless transition from like rapping to being a podcast host. And he, even though he doesn't ask like the greatest questions sometimes, it's just like a fun listen.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, so like getting into that and like the looseness that he gets stuff out of rappers. It's kind of like the same approach that we have to interviewing where it's like, we want to get a different interview than you would give, you know, on another, you know, show. And like Nori does that. And like All the Smoke, which is a Showtime podcast. Shout out to Synergy. You know what I mean? Like it's the same thing, but they do it with basketball. Like they get stories out of basketball players that you wouldn't, like it's frank conversation. You know what I'm saying? And that's like the best type of like podcasting.
Yeah, I won't judge you for your A-Rod reference, though.
And then also, you know, shout out to, she's on our show, our narrator, Julia Young. Her and our good friend, Mike Carlingo.
Mike Carlingo!
They just launched a podcast, Java Good Morning, which we're biased because we were all on the same MTV2 show years ago. But they're two of the funniest people that we know, and they remind us like, so much of ourselves. And that's a hilarious podcast. We also have, you know, she used to be on our show, Z-Way. She's getting her own show there. So this is an example of us fostering new talent. And then there's a young comedian named Tawanda, who I've been following forever on Twitter. And we just hired him on the show because, like, we love his vibe. We love like his point of view and just want to get him, you know, get him started in the industry and just get his, you know, feel him out. So that's the kind of thing. You see these people, you see their timeline, you're like, oh, okay, that would be a great fit for our show. And just constantly just keeping the show, you know, kind of fluid.
Drafting people. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's the draft. Shout out to Rainey, too.
How have you guys felt about having Showtime? You know, obviously you feel great about Showtime as the parent company, I'm sure. But having the various Showtime stars on the show, how have you felt you've done with keeping that organic, keeping it so that you're only having the Showtime people who are maybe on brand rather than just this person has a new Showtime show this week? You know, we're the house talk show, so come on in and promote your stuff. You don't want to be that, obviously. So how do you feel like you've balanced right. that?
We don't really do that. We don't. There's never been like, yo, here's some random person from a Showtime show you've never watched. You have to have them on. Like, if someone's on our show, it's like we either know them or we watch the show. And, you know, not even, again, this is not paid for by Showtime. It's not me being a company guy. There are Showtime shows I really watch and enjoy. Like, Good Lord Bird that just came on. No one told me to watch it. I literally sat there from the first episode and was like, wow, this is an incredible show. And then we had Ethan Hawke on. And if you watch that interview, that's not like, hey, company
that
guy.
That was wild.
What's it like working for Showtime? It was like, I'm like, what about this in episode 4? What was it? Where'd you shoot? How'd you do? Where was the, you know, you got that kind of thing. And even now, you know, like, that was just an amazing show. And we're still trying to get some of the characters that were on there on our show, because that's the kind of natural synergy you want. You don't want to see people like, hey, you know, the worst is when you're just like, hey, this person is our interview today, and full disclosure, their show comes on Showtime, which is a parent company of, you know, that
company
guy.
Of yeah that's like so goofy.
You don't want to do that.
The boilerplate.
You know, it's all our interviews. If you see someone on our show, it's not because their publicist placed them there. It's someone we want to have on the show, someone we're interested in, and someone we'd be proud of having an interview on our show with.
Yeah, like Black Monday is a perfect example mm-hmm. of that Showtime thing that you're talking about. Like, we had Regina King, we had Don Cheadle.
Yep.
But it was totally organic. We talked about, like, bumping into each other at Upfronts, or not Upfronts.
At TCAs. TCAs? Yeah.
At TCAs, yeah. And, like, you know, and all that type of stuff. And, like, you know, Regina was just like, oh, good luck with your little show. You know what I mean? That whole run that we had, that riff. That was, you know what I mean? Like, it's organic. And it wasn't like Showtime being like, hey, we have this show coming on, so you have to have these people on. Motherfucker. Signed Showtime president. You know what I mean?
Now, moving towards wrapping things up, I believe that as of this second, if the NBA season were to end today, the Knicks would be in the playoffs. How nervous are you to even say anything like that out loud?
I'm not nervous at all, because not they got all. That 10th seed playing shit where you could, like, it's like a wild card game for the NBA finally. So even if the Knicks finish in 10th, we still got a shot.
Okay.
Let's go.
Not nervous, because you know what being a Knicks fan means? It means ignoring reason and logic. Last night.
That's right.
I was watching that game. I was watching the Knicks play, and you know what? They were down by 20 points at halftime. And everyone on the timeline was like, I'm not watching this. I'm going to turn and watch something else. And I said, no. Because as a Knicks fan, you know what the best part of a Knicks fan being a Knicks fan is? When they do that fake comeback and don't pull it off, or just rip your heart off for the fourth quarter. And I said, let's get ready, boys. And I sat there.
That's right.
And they brought it within 4 with 10 seconds left. And they couldn't get it because of a stupid flagrant foul. And I sat there like, you stupid idiot. You did this again. You did this to yourself.
And you know what?
And you know what? I'll be there in 2 nights to do it again. Yeah.
That's right.
Knicks
and it doesn't
basketball.
Matter.
Let's go, baby.
Because The motto in the Martinez household is, if the Knicks cover, they won.
There you go.
And they covered last night, so they won.
We're going to raise that banner in Madison Square Garden.
Let's go. The Knicks cover, the spread.
Listen.
Dude, after 3 years of having Dave Roberts rip my heart out, throw it on the floor, and stomp all over it in the playoffs, I'll take an asterisk championship. Yeah.
No asterisk. So enjoy that. L.A., you deserve that. I feel, actually, as a New Yorker, I feel sorry for LA that y'all did not get to really, like, you know what I'm saying, and like marinate on winning the World Series and an NBA championship in the same year. You know what I'm saying? Yep. That's huge. You know what I'm saying? That's like once in a that might not ever happen again in your lifetime. You know what I'm saying? So you
I
got
mean, twice
that.
In mine, 88.
Nice.
Well, we do like to wrap our interviews with the same question for all of our guests. What are you guys watching and enjoying?
Ooh, what are we watching and enjoying? What was I watching? Let me see.
Oh, God. Let me just get it out. Let me just get out, because this is going to cook me. This is going to cook
Here
me as soon
go.
As I say
Here we go.
I randomly stumbled upon this random show called Kingdom about this guy, you know, like you guys... I don't know if you're familiar. It stars like some guy. I don't even know his name. Like the only person who I remember, who I know from the cast is Nick Jonas. And it's like an MMA family. And like, you know, it's like a total broverload, you know what I'm saying? But like, it sucked me in, you know what I'm saying? And like, I watched the all three seasons. You know what I'm saying? Me and Heather just sitting there watching it, like getting drunk off, you know, good, decent wine, 90 points or better. Holla at your boy. And, but yeah, no, that one. And then like, you know, just like random stuff that you think is new, but is not. Cause like you said, there's so many streaming services picking up stuff that you'll catch a show and be like, oh, this looks interesting. Oh, this is from 2013.
Yeah. And launched only on DirecTV.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an AT&T original. What is that?
Yeah.
What the fuck is that?
I've watched so much stuff. It's all blurring together now, but let me see what I can remember. Okay, Industry, really enjoyed that. The Flight Attendant, enjoyed that. Tiny Pretty Things, Lupin, Doom Patrol. Let me see, what else? I've been watching, like, basically, if Netflix, if it's on the opening screen of Netflix, I'm watching it. Like, we're at that pandemic level where Netflix, Amazon, and HBO Max are like, I have nothing left. You've watched everything I own. They're like, I'm at the point now I'm bringing up stuff on Amazon. And they're like, wait, we have that? Are you sure?
Like, are you sure we have that?
You can see when you click watch and it's just like a delay and it's like, you just hear them, you can actually hear them through the computer, like, find the file. I don't, no one's watched that since 03. I don't
What's
know, dude.
What's going on? It's buffering. I don't know.
What is this? I don't know. Just play something. So
I don't know. It stars Bokeem Woodbine. Just play it.
Yes. But yeah, just watching everything. Oh, Your Honor on Showtime. So, and I'm, you know what? I Showtime's not going to like. They didn't show a new episode yesterday. I'm like, what's going on, guys? I was going to beef, but then I was like, you know what? Maybe that's not smart for me to do. Maybe I'll just be quiet. Okay. So.
On that note, thank you guys so much for joining us. Deezes and Marrow airs Sundays and Thursday nights at 11 p.m. on Showtime, returning January 31st.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us. You know what I'm saying?
Dr. Leslie and Daniel.
By the way, it's Leslie and Daniel.
You know
what I'm saying? You know the fucking vibes. Hollywood Reporter, let's fucking go.
Number five.
As usual, we wrap things up with the Critics Corner. Dan, we just talked about the quote-unquote wasteland that is the February TV calendar. So new releases this week are a little stretchy. Obviously, we just talked about the return of Deezes and Marrow. You've got The Investigation as well as The Lady and the Dale on HBO, Firefly Lane on Netflix. Not a lot. What you got?
It's a little thin, and reviews for HBO's The Investigation, which is a Scandinavian import, have been mixed. Our colleague Ingu Kang was not a big fan, so taking that with some caution. On the other hand, Ingu was a big fan of The Lady and the Dale, which premieres on Friday on HBO, and it's really, really good. It is a four-episode documentary series about a trans woman who attempted to turn the car industry upside down with a gas-efficient three-wheel car in the mid to late 70s, but who also was part of a multi-state, multi-decade web of cons and fraud. And that's just where the story begins. It is a very, very catchy story, very well told. In my Now See This newsletter this week, I said that it was kind of, God, it's hard to describe what it is. It's sort of McMillions meets Tucker meets Netflix's Disclosure documentary. It is a bunch of different things. It's sometimes a little bit wacky. It's very empathetic. It's told with real personality and style. There are a lot of reenactments that are delivered in a kind of collage animated style that's very funny and very likable. I really enjoyed The Lady and the Dale. I thought it was a good watch. It was probably exactly the correct length. It's four episodes. And, you know, how frequently do you watch one of these true crime type documentary series and go, my God, that was six episodes too long? Or in the case of all of these Nexium documentaries, my God, I can't believe it was already six episodes too long and they're giving it a second season. This at four episodes is really and truly, it's the right length for this story. And I found it fascinating. Netflix has We Are the Brooklyn Saints premiering on Friday, and it's the latest in an apparently never-ending string of amateur sports documentary series, kind of in the vein of Last Chance U. I understand that there were football documentary series before Last Chance U. Obviously, Hard Knocks is kind of the progenitor of the genre, but Hard Knocks is about professionals. You know, the heart of Hard Knocks has always been with the players who were sort of on the cusp of the league and the people who were trying to make the cut and all of that. But it is still professionals, whereas Last Chance U focused on junior college players, focused on amateurs, people who basically for whom the NFL was really a pipe dream, and yet they still believed it was a possibility. Well, this is even younger. This is kids 8 to 13 in Brooklyn playing in a rec league that is sort of a oasis from the crime-ridden neighborhoods where they live in their part of Brooklyn. And the football aspect of the story, not so much with the convincing or good, but the human side of it is very appealing. And again, it's only 4 episodes and none of them are over 50 minutes. So if you're sort of tentative on the genre, this would be one that would not overstay its welcome. But yeah, it's not my favorite in this genre. I still always tell people that they should be watching Last Chance U because it's fantastic. Last Chance U to some degree spawned Cheer, which has sort of behind the scenes issues and reasons why it's a little problematic, but still a really good season of television. And at some point this spring, TBD, we're eventually going to get the long gestating Last Chance U college basketball spinoff. And I am really looking forward to that one, both because I'm looking forward to it and because it's time to give more different sports the Last Chance U treatment. So there are a couple things. It is a little bit of a slow weekend, though. So maybe this is the time to catch up again on Le Pen.
There you go. Well, for more of Dan's weekly recommendations, be sure to subscribe to THR's Now See This newsletter. This feels like a good place to wrap things up, Dan. Thanks for listening to TV's Top 5, the Hollywood Reporter's TV podcast.
Be sure to subscribe on all of your various podcasting platforms. If you like us, rate us. If you really like us, write a little reviewy thing. It does help spread the word of mouth. We're always happy to chat with you guys on Twitter. If you have questions, comments, concerns, suggestions for new formats, etc., etc. If you have questions for future mailbag segments, though, you can email us at tvstop5@thr.com. That's tvstop5, the number 5, at thr.com.
And if you're a fan of You're the Worst, I'll be moderating a reunion to benefit Feeding America with the cast on Sunday, January 31st. Check out play-purview.com/events for more details.
Until next week, Leslie.
Until next week, Dan.